from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the House of Representatives has unanimously passed an important measure to provide humanitarian aid to genocide victims. It's bipartisan. All members of the House approving this. It now makes its way to the president. The lawmaker that has been championing the legislation is Congressman Chris Smith. He'll be here in just a moment with the details. And outgoing House Speaker Paul Ryan says the outcome in California defies logic. All the contested congressional seats on election night, even those where the Republicans were leading, have been declared for the Democrat candidate. One such election was in Orange County, California, poised to be elected as the first Korean-American woman to Congress. Young Kim saw her 14-point lead disappear when provisional ballots were counted. How did this happen? Well, that's what many are asking, and I'll ask that question of former Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell. And later in the program, class will be in session to answer one of our listeners' questions from earlier in the week. So sharpen your pencils. Here's the question. Can the lower courts be restricted so that only the Supreme Court handles challenges to the president? We'll talk with FRC's Vice President of Policy, one of our resident attorneys, Travis Weber. We'll also be taking your phone calls a little later on this Thursday edition of Washington Watch, so don't go anywhere. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, a bill 2 years in the making that aims to provide humanitarian relief to victims of the Islamic State's genocide in Iraq and Syria is finally heading to President Donald Trump's desk. Late in the evening of November the 27th, earlier this week, the U.S. House of Representatives unanimously passed the Iraq and Syria Genocide Relief and Accountability Act of 2018, or H.R. 390. The measure provides humanitarian relief to genocide victims in Iraq and Syria, and it holds the Islamic State, those that perpetrated the genocide, accountable. With us now is Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. He represents the 4th Congressional District. He's the chairman of the House Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, Global Human Rights. He introduced the legislation all the way back in 2016, again in 2017. More than a dozen Democrats and Republicans also co-sponsored the bill. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Congratulations on two fronts, your reelection, but also congratulations on your persistence in working on behalf of those who were being targeted for genocide there in the Middle East.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for your work on this, because you have been outstanding in defending the Christians, the people of faith who were targeted for genocide, and all persecution, which unfortunately is rampant throughout the world.
It really has, and it expanded quite tremendously under the previous administration that really,
it did.
I would almost say, facilitated this by ignoring it. What are the practical outcomes of this legislation in terms of those in Iraq and Syria who have been targeted?
Sure. Well, because the Obama administration had not provided assistance to the Christians and the Yazidis who had escaped, who were victims of genocide, I chaired 10, count them, 10 congressional hearings trying to get the administration to provide support. They would say, we're looking into it. I went over there over a year ago and met with many of these people, including this great Archbishop Bashar Werda, who's the head of the Chaldean church there, the Archdiocese. And they were bewildered as to why the administration would not help. So I introduced this bill, as you pointed out in your opening, 2 years ago, to compel that kind of support. They simply would not provide the assistance. And it had not been, frankly, Tony, for private Christian charitable aid to the tune of over $80 million, the aid to the church in need, Knights of Columbus. They all came up with multi-millions of dollars to help these Christians. We would have had more dead children, frail elderly, people who were sick, moms, it would have been an absolute disaster because of this negligence. So this legislation ensures, and it's strongly supported by our president. He, you know, has called for its passage. He has said he'll sign it. It'll be next week. And this funds entities, including faith-based ones, that will provide the humanitarian stabilization and recovery aid for these genocide survivors. When I was there, and as well as other times, but certainly when I was there, you know, before Christmas last year, I met with people whose faith was strong, but their bodies were weak, and all of them had lost loved ones. Every single person I talked to had lost multiple family members and friends. So the trauma of that was profound. And then when you have to add to that food, clothing, shelter, medicines that are unavailable, thank God the Christian communities in the West, particularly the United States, came up with significant monies. But where was the United States? AWOL.
And what's important about this is that not all of these people want to leave their homeland.
No, that's
and
great.
And we don't want them to leave because they're a stabilizing force if they're there and they're grounded, they're healthy, they're well, and they can provide a stabilizing force in a very volatile region of the world.
Without a doubt, you know, the the people that I spoke to, they want to go back home. I mean, the Nineveh Plain, their 2,000 years of presence and thriving as Christians and as businessmen and women and, you know, their families, they want to go back home to Mosul and the Nineveh Plain and other places in Iraq. And so that reintegration really provides an opportunity for us to facilitate that. And as you said, they do provide a strong stabilizing influence to the country to which they return. Although they're still in Iraq, they're in Erbil, you know, a sector of it under the control by the Kurds. But many of them are in the process of going back, and they want to go back and be reintegrated safely. And that's where our money is so critically important, in assisting that. I would have to
Good. No, I was just going to say, as you pointed out earlier, there are non-government organizations, NGOs as we call them, that are already there that have been doing this work privately funded. This is only going to be going to enable them to expand and have additional resources. They're already there on the ground. They know what's doing. This is the best expenditure of limited U.S. resources by actually partnering with even these faith-based and non-faith-based organizations, but private entities that are over there doing the work.
Well, unquestionably. As a matter of fact, even Archbishop Huerta said to me, and I used it in my floor remarks during the debate on the bill, that Christians, this is his quote, Christians in Iraq are still at the brink of extinction. H.R. 390 is vital to our survival. That's our bill. If it becomes law, and it will, implementation must be full and fast. Otherwise, the help it provides will be too late for us. What an ominous saying from a man who has overcome struggles, the likes of which I can't even begin. I mean, he's a very holy and effective leader of the church, and he inspires faith and overcoming spirits on the part of the Christians. There he is, walking point, along with other Christians to overcome this terrible legacy of ISIS genocide. And but this money has to go out quickly. I believe it will. Mark Green, who's our USAID administrator, the Agency for International Development, is an outstanding leader and is poised. He has done a surveillance as to what is needed in that region, particularly for the Christians who were bypassed previously. And I'm very, very optimistic that this will be implemented robustly. And that will mean that these wonderful people get the help that they so richly need.
Well, Congressman Chris Smith, I know you you have to go. I appreciate you joining us, but I want to thank you for your persistence. This is not the first time that you have been a voice for the voiceless and you have advocated for the persecuted. But once again, your steadfastness, your determination has paid off. And so I commend you for that.
Thank you, Tony. And thank you for your help, because you have, FRC has been very helpful with this legislation. Thank you.
Look forward to seeing it signed next week. Congressman Chris Smith, as always, great to have you on the program.
Great to be with you again, Tony, and have a good night.
All right. Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. He really has. He's been in Congress for over 30 years and has, along with former Congressman Frank Wolf of Virginia, who is was also and continues to be a guest on the program, two of the most committed members of Congress, and a lot of members address these issues, but those two have been focused like a laser on this. And despite the obstacles, the discouragement, they continued to focus and successfully got this legislation through. You'll recall, back when the Obama administration, John Kerry, Secretary of State, refused to even call what was happening in Iraq and Syria genocide. That was the first step. And Chris and some others, Jeff Fortenberry of Nebraska, also pushing for that declaration of genocide. And they took the lead and forced the administration into doing it. So anyway, those things matter. We talked about this earlier in the week. We need, as Christians, we need to be praying. We need to be involved in this, raising the awareness of the persecution based on religion that is taking place all around the world. Upwards of anywhere between 60 to 70% of the world's population being persecuted for their faith. And Christians, by the way, being the largest single group that's being targeted. All right, coming up next, is there funny business in California with the state's voting system? Some are raising serious voter integrity concerns, including the outgoing Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. He had this to say earlier today.
In California, it just defies logic to me. We had a lot of wins that night. We were only down 26 seats the night of the election. And 3 weeks later, we lost basically every contested California race. This election system they have, I can't begin to understand what ballot harvesting is. When you have candidates that win the absentee ballot vote, win the day of the vote, and then lose 3 weeks later because of provisionals, mm-hmm. that's really bizarre. And so I just think that that's a very, very strange outcome. When you win the absentee ballots and you win the in-person vote, where I come from, you win the election.
This has been years in the making as liberal Democrats taken control of the California Assembly, the government there. They've put in place laws, rules, if you will, for elections that could make it very difficult for conservatives to win in California. Could this go to other states? Is this a problem that goes beyond the borders of California? Why should you care? We're going to talk about that next when we return with Ken Blackwell, former Secretary of State of Ohio. He joins us to talk about what has happened in California, what could be happening in other states, and how this could affect the outcome of future elections. And this is significant. There's nothing more important than preserving the integrity of the vote. You and I, we have a, as we talk about on here, we have the freedom, we have the opportunity to determine the future of our country by our vote. If that's manipulated, if that's diluted, we're robbed of our vote. We're going to talk about what's behind this unusual outcome in California when we return. Don't go away. Tony Perkins here, President of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the five-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, known as SOCE, claiming that they are fraudulent, ineffective, and harmful. But are they? LGBT activists claim that sexual orientation is immutable and can't be changed by therapy or counseling. They also claim that people who attempt to change their sexual orientation end up more depressed and suicidal. As it turns out, studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are in fact very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. For a thorough analysis of all the major studies done on the effectiveness of SOCE, visit frc.org/SOCE. Again, that's frc.org/SOCE.
Are you ready to take a stand? Now you can with FRC's new Stand Firm mobile app, which allows you to stay engaged and informed on the most important issues facing our country. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on issues of faith, family, and freedom with just a tap of the screen. Listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, and much more. Join Christians across America as we stand firm together. Visit frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading abortion supplier and has hailed itself as the champion of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. Okay. California, on election night, after, basically everybody was going to bed, there were about five House races that were not called on election night. Now, in those five races, in three of the five, the Republicans were clearly leading in the race. Now, all five have been called for the Democrats. Once the you heard it before we went to the break. Paul Ryan made reference to it. It's called ballot harvesting. Now, what is that? It's a new term. California. Paving the way for something new. Joining me now to talk about this and explain what happened in California and how it could happen elsewhere is Ken Blackwell, Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance here at the Family Research Council, former Secretary of State of Ohio and Undersecretary at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and has monitored elections literally around the world. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right. Speaker Paul Ryan earlier today says the outcome in California defies logic. Mathematically, it seems almost statistically impossible that all of these races, even those where the Republicans were leading, have all gone to Democratic candidates. What's going on?
Well, look, let me just first frame this, Tony, if you may, with Madison and Hamilton. They were profoundly realistic in their view of human nature. While they believed that man, at his best, is capable of reason, self-discipline, and fairness, they also recognize that he can be susceptible to passion, intolerance, and greed. What that means is that there is a capacity to cheat. Therefore, we have rules, we have timelines. These things make sure that we have an even playing field. They breed confidence, and they protect the integrity of in this case, our election system. Out in California, there were things that happened. They missed time deadlines. changed rules that made it lax. Make the rules more lax, and who could vote, and how votes were counted. And consequently, this played right into a five-state strategy that the Democrats had put in play for 2018, particularly in the House. They knew that they wanted to turn 27 seats, and they targeted five states, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Texas, Wisconsin, California. And they then ran every strategy that they could to, in fact, create the numbers that they needed to win elections. And key in California is what they did in Orange County. Orange County was the Republican stronghold. It was Reagan country. Dana Roebuck was out there, and he lost. And they did it with inmate voting. They did it with, those who questioned whether or not there were non-citizens voting. So this just tells us that we have to be vigilant. We can't take a time out. We have to understand the rules. We have to make sure that they're enforced. And we have to make sure that we get out our votes. If not, there will be a price to pay in 2020.
Two issues that factored into the outcome there in California, which rules were changed. You made reference to rules, but the conditional ballots. California has effectively adopted same-day voter registration with the introduction of conditional voting. Now, this election cycle, the voters who missed the 15-day voter registration deadline could request to cast a conditional ballot. So they were able just to show up on Election Day, cast this ballot, but those were counted post-election, correct?
Okay, that's correct. That was a change in the rules. It was a change in the rules that I think raises suspicion because it invites fraud. It invites...
Absolutely.
Again, we have 50 state elections on Election Day, and we believe in states' rights, and states have a right to in fact establish their election guidelines. So that's why we have to be vigilant. We have to understand that we can't let these little things happen under the guise of being fair, because they're not fair. I mean, this whole notion that people oppose voter ID is ludicrous. When you think of all of the things that we need to show an ID for in this country, from proving that you're old enough to buy cigarettes and alcohol, to in fact getting on an airplane or taking out a library book. But when you begin to relax the rules, when you begin to stretch out the election period from one day to 1 week to 2 weeks to now, in some cases, 5 weeks, you invite manipulation.
But
if we're not vigilant.
Ken, I know 10th Amendment, we're all about the states having their rights to do what and set up their own systems and such. But can you not make an argument that citizens in other states are being defrauded, they're being deprived of the validity of their vote by allowing other states to manipulate the system where you could have fraudulent voting that tilts the balance of Congress?
You really can make that argument. And I think with the other argument that you can make is that in federal elections that impact the governance of our nation, voters should be playing by the same rules, the same guidelines, and have the same protection against their legally cast vote being negated by an illegally cast vote. So, we have to engage. We have to be smart in our ground strategy. But we really do have to be vigilant.
All right, I got to leave it there, Ken. We didn't even get to the ballot harvesting. Maybe I'll talk about that later. Ken Blackwell, as always, great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right, folks, don't go away. We answer one of our listeners' questions next here on Washington Watch with Travis Weber. Don't go away. Tony Perkins here, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the five-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Is Planned Parenthood a champion for women? In reality, Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading killer of unborn children. Despite this, they have been hailing themselves as the voice of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities today, their scandals continue to pile up. Planned Parenthood's current motto is care, no matter what. A more fitting motto would be profit, no matter what. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood. Again, that's frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay. Let me hit, before I go to my next topic here with Travis Weber, who's in the studio with me, let me address that issue of ballot harvesting, because that's, is that like organ harvesting? I mean, it's a weird term, but here's what it is. In California, they will mail out ballots, and you're supposed to send them back in the mail. Several states have voting by mail. I think that's problematic. It's hard to verify, but they have it. But here's what the rules now allow, and this is where the Democrats have been working and how they were able to move races where there was a 14-point lead, 14-point lead, not 14 votes, 14 points, for a Republican candidate only to be declared for the Democratic candidate. What ballot harvesting allows is people basically to look and see who is a Democrat, according to the voting rules, where they live. They are sent ballots. People then get that list. They go to their home, and they say, hi, we're here to collect your ballot. And there's actually video of people, showing up at the door saying, we're here to help you in turning in your ballot. And they collect these ballots. If they vote Democrat, and they take them all and deliver them. Now, how in the world do you preserve the integrity of the ballot that way? These are partisan activists who are going knocking on doors, getting people, assume they're getting the people to fill out the ballots. They're not filling them out for them, but that possibly could be happening as well. That's ballot harvesting, and that's how after the election that they just have to be postmarked by the election day, but they can come in two to 14 days. And that's how these elections swung so far after election night. So anyway, that's ballot harvesting. Okay. We got a question earlier this week from one of our listeners. And by the way, class is in session. Oh, we don't have our bell. Our class is in session here, and we like to be educational here. There was a question raised about the president. If you notice that how the president in his executive orders, whether it's been on immigration, whether it's been on the military policy as commander-in-chief, you've had the opposition venue shopping. That's what's called venue shopping. They look for a favorable lower court to take their case, file their suit, and then, I mean, they get a liberal judge who's going to rule with them. In this case, or in cases, in the immigration, military, transgender policy that was unilaterally enacted by the Obama administration, you've got district court rulings that are not limited to that district but are being applied nationwide. A district court judge basically having more authority than the president of the United States on issues of immigration and the military, clearly where the president is given the power to rule. So someone asked the question, can those courts be restricted so that only the Supreme Court can provide the oversight to presidential action? Joining me now with an answer is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
So what's the answer?
Well, the answer is I wish I had about 3 hours to go over this, but we'll try to hit it quick. Breaking this issue down, there are several different aspects of the judiciary here that we're going to deal with. One, the question of how to regulate the federal courts. The Constitution is very clear that Congress, Article 1, Section 8, Congress has the power and the authority to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. If we turn to Article 3 and examine what the Constitution says there, it vests the judicial power in the Supreme Court and sets up the Supreme Court, but it really leaves lower courts largely undefined, leaving Congress with the power to regulate courts. Therefore, Congress can say courts have no authority over XYZ issues. That, in essence, would kick those issues to the states. They would get funneled through the state courts, which could make their way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The issue is more complex than that, but basically, yes, Congress could say these federal courts, we can abolish them if we wanted,
right.
But they could say they don't have authority over these issues. Now, this issue gets at another point, which is the federal courts being out of control with how they're trying to manage the executive branch through these nationwide injunctions. And legally, there are a lot of people now who are pushing back on this and saying this is improper because they're declaring the law and making up law in essence instead of deciding the case before them.
Right.
They're saying this is the law of the land, not deciding the case before them. That's a different issue, but an important one. And thirdly, as the DOJ is now doing, taking cases to the Supreme Court before judgment at the lower courts, where the lower courts are delaying, and there's a good reason to bring these cases to the Supreme Court, which they're allowed to do currently. We see this in immigration and the transgender cases. They're using current procedural rules. It's perfectly proper. And if the Supreme Court says there's a good enough reason to take this up, they're going to take them up.
So, Travis, we're up against a break, so I'm going to ask you to stick around here. But what we're seeing happening where district court judges are issuing rulings that are nationwide, how unprecedented is it? How common is that in the history of the courts? We're going to talk about that when we come back, so hold that thought, Travis.
Okay.
Don't go anywhere.
Okay.
Don't you go anywhere either, because we're coming back. We're going to finish that conversation, our conversation here with Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy, and then we're going to go to the phone lines to continue our conversation from yesterday with you. What's at the top of your list in terms of what you would like to see this lame duck Congress that's limping its way out of here through the end of the month? What would you like to see them do? And I go, there's limits, but no limits here. You can put anything and everything out there for consideration. That's next on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference? Now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together and advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just a tap of the screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app.
Tony Perkins here, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join Luana and me, General Jerry Boykin, Michelle Bachman, on FRC's first ever D.C. Christian Heritage Tour and Summit in Washington, D.C. on March the 28th through the 31st, 2019. Washington is the epicenter of American politics and the free world. It's also a place that will inspire your faith and your patriotism. With the five-star Trump International Hotel as home base, your experience will include a tour and dinner at the Museum of the Bible, a private tour of the Capitol, dinner on Capitol Hill, renowned monuments, briefings from national leaders, and, pending approval, a White House briefing. Journey with us as we explore God's providence in America's past, His hand in the present, and His heart for America's future. For more information, visit frc.org/DC Heritage. Again, that's frc.org/DC Heritage for more information about the Christian Heritage Tour and Summit.
Planned Parenthood is the nation's leading abortion supplier and has hailed itself as the champion of women for decades. But nothing could be further from the truth. Sadly, this organization has been caught repeatedly violating the law and violating women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the disastrous effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. For more information on how Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
Should people be allowed to question their feelings? If a person expresses feelings of same-sex attraction, shouldn't they be allowed to seek professional help if they don't want these feelings? In a country such as ours, the answer to these questions should be a no-brainer. Incredibly, some liberal states have banned sexual orientation change efforts, claiming they are ineffective and harmful. But are they? Studies have shown that sexual orientation change efforts are very effective in helping people overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. To find out more, visit frc.org/SOCE.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, Travis Weber here in studio with me as we're having a little class in session session. Discussing the role of the courts and limiting those courts. Okay, before we went to the break, I asked you the question. One of the issues that's been at the one of the big concerns is how the district courts have been issuing rulings nationwide that have affected decisions by this administration. How common of occurrence is that in previous administrations?
Yeah, I think, Tony, the way to look at this is it certainly has been more common in recent years. And it was more common under Barack Obama's administration, increasing under President Trump's administration. So I think we see a wave of uptick among this type of nationwide injunction, this use legally of that tool in crossing over administrations. And I think it certainly has been pronounced with the rulings against President Trump's immigration and transgender issues.
I mean, this is I think this is borderline constitutional crisis when you have district level judges that are essentially replacing the president's view on issues with their own. Now, I know it's got to be litigated all the way out, but the president, in some cases on these immigration policies, those things have been held up because a district court judge said, no, it's banned nationwide.
Yeah, I think there are several things here. I mean, one is they are used by both sides. You know, now the problem is it tends to politicize the judiciary because if someone knows I will get a nationwide injunction for my issue, they're not going to seek a political solution. They're going to go to the courts.
Right, and that's what's happened increasingly is the courts have become the deciders of policy in this country.
And when you get a nationwide injunction, that is in essence a judge being able, if we're going to permit that, to tell the president, tell the executive, I'm deciding policy on this. Now, to be fair, people arguing for them would say you need an efficient way of vindicating widespread rights violations. Okay. The problem is the expansion and aggregation of what is called constitutional rights or under the veil of constitutional power has really increased. The federal judiciary has grabbed hold of that power in a lot of ways, and therefore there's a real abuse here And the Congress, the executive, can be held in check by the voters. Once those judges are appointed, though, they're not held in check, and right. That's the real threat to our democracy.
But when a judge makes this decision, it could be years before this is adjudicated all the way through the process.
It could be years, and the injunction doctrine and requirements are there for a reason. When you go to court and you say, I need immediate relief, okay, the court looks at that and says, if these factors are met, we will grant that. The problem is you need to hold those requirements strictly. You need to stick to them. Can't start abusing them and lightening up because there's a desire to change policy, right? So right. They're there for a reason, but if we abuse them, there's going to be this push to do away with these nationwide injunctions when they may actually be needed in some cases. And so there's a real sort of loosening of these requirements, and that almost becomes the bigger focus. We've seen this in the news. When news stories will focus on the injunction, the case hasn't even been decided.
Right.
But there's an injunction, and the people act like it's over. It's not over. It's a preliminary relief mechanism, but it can't be abused or it's going to be lost when we really need it.
So to summarize our session here, going back to the original question, the Congress can, in fact, restrict the areas that the courts can focus on, and they could remove the right of the lower courts to deal with issues regarding the president's executive order.
They can. Constitutionally, Congress could do away with the whole lower federal court system. Now, that's probably not going to happen, but they have the constitutional authority to do this. And this is why it's so important to get back to the text of our Constitution, because in the current debates, we often take in ideas that are put out there, and we may lose focus of what the grounding of these rights in our system is really based on, the Constitution, which gives Congress, the people's representatives, the power to regulate the lower federal courts.
All right. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
I don't think you're going to have to worry about the Congress restricting the rights of liberal courts anytime soon, especially now that Nancy Pelosi – I didn't talk about this yesterday, but yesterday – Nancy Pelosi was able to gain yet once more the nomination of the Democratic, what will be the Democratic majority, the nomination for Speaker of the House when they return in January. Now, she still has to persuade about half of the 32 Democrats who opposed her yesterday in her nomination. The floor vote will take place on January the 3rd, where she must win a majority of the entire House. It's 218 votes, not just the Democrats. Now, in the next Congress, right now, the Democrats will have 234 seats. That's what's been decided so far. That is up from 197. They had 197 in the last Congress. The Republicans, Democrats almost switch places. In terms of the number of seats that they will have. The Republicans will have right now on track to have about 200 in this next Congress. So anyway, she'll be the first person to reclaim the Speaker's gavel in 63 years, and she will be the top Democrat countering President Trump, which I actually think is good. I think the contrast will be very helpful to Republicans in 2020. All right, we're going to go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. Already got folks waiting. Let's go to BG in Texas. BG, welcome to Washington Watch.
How are you? Listen to you as much as I can. I really love your program. Is there any possible way that we can get rid of that further estate to the west out there, maybe a big earthquake? We don't need their problems anymore. I mean, they're the most crookedest, un-Christian state in the world. It seems like they've read the Bible and want to go against everything that God said, even as going as far as electing a governor that's, you know, can a state be gotten rid of some way?
Well, BG, it's actually interesting. I've been out to California. I actually go out there a fair amount. And in Northern California, which is actually very conservative.
It's a lot different than Southern, yes.
It absolutely is. And they would like to separate from Southern California. They like to there's been a movement for a number of years out there for them to separate so that they can be more – Well, they can have government that's more reflective of their values. So you're not the only ones that are concerned about what's happening down there in the southern part of California. BG, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. California. Actually, it's the coast. You know, you look at an election map and you look at the red dots and you look at the blue. And the blue is concentrated in the major cities and the rest of the country is red. The cities where we are losing, and obviously you got big cities on the coast, Los Angeles, those areas, and then New York City. The vast majority of America is right of center. But you get geographically, and of course people live in the country and then the suburbs, but it's these cities, and this is where this vote harvesting is taking place, ballot harvesting, where people are able to go door to door and people are not necessarily informed. And it's we need responsible citizenship. I want to see people vote, but I want to see them vote. I don't want to see people vote for them and manipulate the outcome. I don't want my vote to be devalued because someone else who really didn't care let some partisan activist cast their vote for them. That's not the way the system should work, not at all. Let's go to Pete in Missouri. Pete, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. All joking about California aside, quite seriously, I'd like to see the lame duck Congress revoke, abolish, repeal Obamacare, and defund Planned Parenthood. But we know this is not likely to happen because we know many Republicans, if not most, and probably the leadership, are cowards. And they're liars, and they're not likely to follow through on what they said they would do.
Pete, you're absolutely right. It's not likely to happen. We came oh so close. One vote in the Senate, John McCain's vote, had he voted, we would have seen, for all intents and purposes, Obamacare repealed and Planned Parenthood defunded. That's how close we came. And
am I still on? But I suspect that a lot of cowards hid behind the fact that they knew Mr. McCain was not going to vote for that and that it would not pass. Therefore, they could vote to overturn it and say, thump their chest, I voted to overturn it, when if their vote had really mattered, they probably would have wimped out and voted against it. That's my suspicion.
I think you're probably right in some cases, although I would say in the House they voted a number of times. I would like to see the Republicans in Congress, both the House and the Senate, be more aggressive and follow the lead of the president who, you know, people may not agree with the president's policies. I happen to agree with his policies, the vast majority, not all of them, vast majority. And what I appreciate about him is that he is actually doing what he said he was going to do. That's refreshing to see a politician actually following through on their commitments wholeheartedly. And that's why I think a lot of people, continue to support this president. Even though, again, I mean, there's some things that I would do differently, but I support his policies.
And the fact that the Senate, at least, if not the House, the Senate is not doing what they said they would do and following their party's president's lead.
Yeah.
Is a failure of Senate leadership in large part.
The Republicans have a tendency, and I've used this term before, but they play not to lose. They don't play to win. I think it's time to play to win. And I think the reason they lost the House is because of that strategy. We've got to keep the pressure on, continuing to push them to do what they said they were going to do. We're not trying to make them do something they didn't say they did. They said they didn't want to do. These are things they said they wanted to do and that they would do. And you're right, Pete. They need to do it. Pete, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening and calling in here to Washington Watch. Let's go to Florence in Indiana. Florence, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Main thing on my list, I got three of them. To get rid of Planned Parenthood, build that wall, hold them, cut down the government if have to. I hope he don't back down this time. And maybe put the district judges in their district and keep them there like they do when we vote, states keep your, you know, to your own state.
Right. Yep. I'm with you, Florence. Florence, thanks for the call. Appreciate you listening. I think a lot of people are in agreement with you. I would say based on of course, this isn't scientific. It's based on the calls this week. Planned Parenthood is at the top of the list, followed by building the wall, which the president has said he is going to do. Let's go. Let's take Gary's call in Kansas. Gary, welcome to Washington Watch. What's at the top of your list?
Thank you, Tony. I'm a 70. I'm 40 years a family doctor. In one of your spots, you mentioned that Planned Parenthood is the biggest killer of unborn babies, but they're also the biggest killer of pregnant women through botched abortions. I'd love to see the nation save over $700 million a year in our taxpayer dollars by defunding Planned Parenthood, finally.
Well, as I just said, Gary, that's at the top of a lot of people's list, and that is something we must continue to push for because you're absolutely right. Planned Parenthood, not only the nation's largest abortion provider, but I actually one of the ways I was able to get the Abortion Clinic Regulation Act passed in Louisiana years ago was because of the abortion industry's lack of concern for the women who come into those clinics. Gary, thank you so much for listening and for calling into Washington Watch. The reality is we're not going to see Planned Parenthood defunded in this lame duck session. And the reason is that the funding bill already passed prior to the election, the appropriations bill for HHS, Department of Health and Human Services. The remaining appropriations bills deal with Homeland Security, judiciary. That's why the funding for the wall is in question, because they have the ability to put the money in there, restrict other monies. Look, it's not going to happen in the next Congress because Nancy Pelosi, who, like Barack Obama, was a champion of Planned Parenthood. But let me tell you what, we need to continue. We need to continue because we are in a forced partnership. You and me, taxpayers, we're in a forced partnership with Planned Parenthood. That has to end, and we cannot rest until that's been eliminated. And even then, we can't arrest because they're going to come up with something else. But we have to continue to push forward on ending the taxpayer dollars going to the nation's largest abortion provider. And we will continue to do that here and advocate for that and push for that. And I hope you'll join me. All right, folks, thanks so much for tuning in. Our time together has once again come to an end. But I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. When you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, just as he lays out in Ephesians chapter 6, when you've done all of that, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.